Take it away whenever you're ready.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Return of the Badasses Part Trey. Today, we're going to be talking about Bloodsport, the 1998 action martial art extravaganza directed by Newt Arnold, who at one time was the two-time recipient of the DGA Award for his work as assistant director in The Godfather 2 and 12 Angry Men.
Nice.
And then in the twilight of his career, he did this. This movie is written by Christopher Cosby and Mel Friedman, two literal who's don't even have an IMDb page. And Sheldon Lettich, who was working as kind of like a spec script author until he wrote this thing and got the attention of everybody. He wrote Rambo 3 for Stallone. He was JCVD's muse, wrote almost all of his scripts in the prime of his career.
Yeah.
It's based on the life story of Frank Dukes, a Canadian martial artist, fight choreographer, and author. And as far as I can tell, giant con man, but we'll probably get into that.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear more about that.
It stars Jean-Claude Van Damme. This is his first performance, no?
I think his first credited performance in America, yes.
He wore a red bodysuit for The Predator for a couple weeks, right, and said, fuck this, and some kind of crazy Brussels accent, and walked off the set.
Mm-hmm.
And then on to Bloodsport and into history, because this movie was a monster hit back in the day, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
It also stars Donald Gibb, who was huge in the 80s as just kind of a hulking bad guy on stage and the TV. You might know him best as Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. Lee Ayers, another kind of literal who. She did this and like two other television things as far as I can tell. Norman Burton, some rando 60s and 70s character actor that was just kind of counting time before retirement. And Forrest motherfucking Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him in here. I'm like, oh my God, this might be one of his first roles. Nope. He did Fast Times, Color of Money, Good Morning Vietnam, and Platoon before he slid into this. Of course, modern fans might recognize him from Black Panther, Star Wars, Rogue One, mm-hmm, Southpaw, which we're going to be looking at real soon, and won an Academy Award back in 2006 for The Last King of Scotland. And finally, Bolo Young, who is honestly still like a terrifying person in this film.
Dude, Bolo Young, there are a couple of shots in this movie that gave me nightmares as a child. Like, he would haunt my dreams because he's terrifying. Yeah. He's got I can't describe his upper body. It's something out of like a fantasy novel. And then the face he makes in one of those shots, it scared me as a child. I was terrified of this man.
The karate face in this film is 11 out of 10 from almost everyone involved. This man looks like Bruce Lee if he added 80 pounds of pure muscle. Like, I cannot believe this guy's fucking physique and the way he can still move. And like when he does a couple times where they like zoom in on his fist curling into like a weapon. And I'm like, no, I don't want to get hit by that thing. That's like that. Yeah. Mike Tyson's fist might be the two scariest things from my childhood.
Yeah.
So this movie, this is a really well picked. So first of all, this is way later in the 80s than I thought it was. Like, in fact, when you watch it, I would have sworn on a Bible that this was shot in like 82 or 83, because it has got a lot of elements that are very dated in it, even for its time.
Yeah, it's composed almost entirely of those elements.
And that's the good. So like I really enjoyed this film on an back in a kid when I was a kid. I would enjoy this completely unironically.
This
like was super influential for kid neighborhood karate fights. Like, we were all doing the extremely exaggerated karate faces and the striking the pose after you hit a guy and holding, you know, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it in good 15 years. I gotta say, it's not as good, I don't think, as I remembered it.
Not even close. No, this used to be one of my all-time favorite martial arts movies, and watching it again, I'm just like, oh my God, this is a very, very bad movie. It leans so hard into those 80s tropes you're talking about that it kind of blew my mind. This movie has no fewer than four montages in it. Some of which are flashbacks, like flashback montages to training sequences. It has a freeze frame at the end, like 1980s. Hello.
Yeah, like 10 minutes in this movie, Jean-Claude Van Damme gets this kind of like confused, I just smelled a fart look on his face, and it dissolves into him as a 12-year-old, a French punk on some kind of army-based deployment deal, and 20 minutes later, it dissolved back into his confused fart-smelling face. I'm like, oh my god, that whole entire thing was a flashback with two separate montages in it.
They start off the movie with back-to-back montages. There's like a montage of them, you know, preparing the gym for the Kumite. There's and at the same time, we're meeting all the competitors, right? And then, yeah, they go to the fart face montage. Yeah, man. It's wild how much this movie leans on this.
We're always decrying in The Walking Dead how like they never really invest in the characters, and then like when they die, they always have the 5-minute speech at. This movie just straight up does that in the first 10 minutes of the film. They're like, oh shit, we forgot to give anyone a reason to care about any of these people. Let's do a 20-minute flashback and invent this guy's fake Asian stepdad that secretly hate trains him to be this.
Oh my god. Just, whose family was killed in the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. Like, they're really like, what's the shortest shortcut we can find to make you care?
Right. And it's like, it's kind of breathtaking. Like, I don't know. It's a lot. You know, if you watch this as a kid in the 80s and early 90s, you know, obviously you're going to love it. If you're watching it now, it's still a hoot, man. There is a lot of like really fun stuff in here. There's also a lot of really great on location shots. Like, I have long been fascinated with that Kowloon walled city the Hong Kong had, and it was torn down in the mid 90s. And this thing was so influential to like anime and cyberpunk shit that like it's like you've seen, if you've never heard of this, you have seen it represented in art and manga and comic books and, you know, movies and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think we watched some version of that in Dread, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know much about this. For people who don't know, how much do you know about this city? Is it?
I know I've been I'm really fascinated with these extreme type of places, like Sealand, same type of thing. Right, some dude just squatted on some kind of old anti-aircraft artillery battery in like the Irish Sea or some shit.
Now he's hosting torrent servers out of it. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had a running gun battle at one point, and they declared themselves. I like shit like this. So apparently this was like some kind of like old temple or fortress within the growing city of Hong Kong. And because of there was a land dispute or like it was kind of, I think the movie kind of lays out the broad strokes that there's some kind of like weird gap in international treaty or who actually owned it. And a lot of the poor residents just started going to work, man. Mm-hmm. And they built within this city. This 6 to 7 to 8 story, just not planned, not engineered, just constructed pile of buildings, just stacked on top of each other, just a nest of rooms. And there was classrooms, and there was metal shops and industry. And like the population density, I guess, of this place was at one time the highest in the whole fucking world. If you search it up, it's like Kowloon walled city. There's tons and tons of information. There's like cool cross sections you can find of it. And I've seen like pictures of it, and I've seen like a grainy documentary that someone filmed in the like late 80s. But I was shocked to see that this was one of the very few Hollywood films that were able to film within it. And it was really cool to see like this stuff like preserved on film. Who knew that in the heart of this thing, there's an underground fighting temple? But, you know, Bloodsport blew the lid off of that in this documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And there's also... Oh, go ahead.
It's 100% true. Everything in Bloodsport definitely really happened, right? That's what Frank Dukes tells me.
Frank Dukes said it's good enough for me.
Yeah.
But, like, there's also just some really jaw-dropping views of mid-80s Hong Kong. And there's a particular shot of, like, Van Damme... doing some forms while he's doing a split on a balcony that looks like it's a million stories high and just looking over the entire like river valley of I mean, that shit's just objectively well shot and beautiful.
Yeah. There's some other cool shots. So, I like some of the work they do during the martial arts tournaments, sort of putting you in the crowd and kind of spinning around and neat stuff.
But if you're going in this blind in 2021, I do have to tell you that there is some of the worst kind of stereotypes in this film. Super offensive. There is some terrible, horrible sexism played as just kind of like one of the guys, you know. Like I forgot that Jackson was like a good guy, because in the first of the film, he's just such clearly going to be the villain. You know, one of the foils, the counterpoint to Jean-Claude Van Damme, that when he turns to the makes the turn to like best friend and face with Van Damme, I'm like, what? And then also I thought like, oh, well, they're going to use him as a way to like, you know, contrast between the genteelness of Van Damme. Van Damme's a giant pig in this movie, too, really. He doesn't know it, and the script doesn't either. But, yo, yeah, it's yeah. But yeah,
they don't do Ray any favors in that first scene where he sits down next to that Chinese woman and starts
just terrifying. Let's just say
being recreationally a gross American. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just recreationally terrifying this woman. And it's fine because he doesn't know any. He doesn't mean anything by it. It's not like he's going to actually rape her. He's just going to act like he's the type of guy who's going to rape her.
Yeah.
And what is she going to, you know,
what reason? I don't know. For his own entertainment.
Just because he's kind of a bad guy. And then the movie decides like one third of the way through, like, you know what? Frank needs a friend. Frank needs a friend. So let's give him this guy as a friend.
Yeah, they're just trying to show he's a rough guy, right? Rough around the edges. Yeah. He's not, he doesn't have manners. You know, he's a tough guy.
No, it's just like, you got to choose which characters is going to be. It's like, there's a character in the classic Stallone film Over the Top who at one point is just ripping open oil cans and drinking oil right out of the can. Mm-hmm. You can't make him into Stallone's best friend a couple scenes later. He's just a mad dog.
Yeah.
He's just a fucking mad dog. And that's what but they needed him to have a friend and an ally. And I guess whoever the native Hong Kong guy that was their actually guide and ally wasn't good enough. So they invented Jackson.
Yeah. Well, they also needed some Apollo Rocky-esque. Like, if you look at this movie, it is like cut from the exact same cloth as Rocky, except the cloth is now old and it's moth eaten. And like, I mean, Rocky did this shit 10 years before.
Right.
But they needed that like Apollo Creed getting killed and, you know, the avenging of the friend, all that stuff during the tournament. They needed that. So
except for they didn't even do that. Like, that's the thing. When they got to the final scene of the movie, I'm like, wait a second. I thought this guy was dead.
Well, this movie thinks it has more honor than it does. I don't know that like him saying checkmate is basically as good as killing him for what I thought was the killing of Ray. I'm with you. Like, I thought, oh man, Chong Li has killed him here. Mm-hmm. And then he's totally fine. He's back to regular old Ray by the end of this.
I'm pretty sure the movie established that he was dead. Like, I just don't understand how, but there's a lot of stuff to confuse me about that second to last bout that we can get into. Okay. Before we get into the total spoilers, I guess for people who are brand new to this film, this is what this movie is about. Jean-Claude Van Damme plays Frank Dukes, a captain in the U.S. Army, who for old reasons, because he owes a life debt for his mentor's son, decides to go AWOL, flee the military to fight in this legendary, but very underground, very illegal, very secretive karate tournament called the Kumite. I actually looked this up. Kumite literally just means like boxing match.
Yeah.
In karate terms.
Sparring, so, that kind of thing.
But it's the Kumite, and it's a blood sport where apparently you can just kill dudes and it's okay, except for it's not, it turns out. I don't know.
Yeah, the legalities of a lot of happenings in this movie are questionable.
Right. It's ran by the triad, so that which they establish as the Hong Kong gangsters, but they're never seen. But that's the excuse. It's being investigated by an American journalist woman who is there only to be the love interest for Jean-Claude Van Damme. And will Jean-Claude go and uphold his adopted family's honor? Will he win the tournament? Will he maintain his good guy status for the film? Who knows? You'll have to watch the film to find out. It's a brisk 93 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't ever kind of really slow or bog down, except for like one maybe montage. But there's enough funny stuff to keep you laughing that sure. It doesn't feel slow. But yeah, that's the movie.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Do you want to talk about Jean-Claude Van Damme at first?
I think that's a great idea.
Because I found myself as watching this film and thinking about, because I've seen a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme's work. I just think, you know, he is unlike almost every other person that's on our badass Rushmore. In that when I think of his films, I think of like Double Impact, Hard Target, Lionheart, but other than like Bloodsport and Time Cop and Universal Soldier, They all just kind of blend together into a whir of mullets and split kicks. And, you know, sometimes he's wearing underwear, sometimes he's wearing acid wash jeans and cowboy boots, but it's all kind of the same film. And I can't really say that about Arnold's work, like Conan, Commando,
right?
Red Heat, Predator, these are very like these are very different. I mean, they're kind of the same films, but they're very different in like their location, the characters he's playing, the bad guys, the and Van Damme is just kind of not like that.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, because all these movies you're mentioning, it's not like they're really similar. I mean, like Dennis Rodman is in a movie where he does karate with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Right. You'd think that would be more memorable than it is. I want to say Mickey Rourke is in that movie too. Double Team. But like they're pretty varied movies as far as like what he's doing and where he's doing it. It's just that none of them are good enough to stand out. Whereas I feel like all those other badasses that we've been talking about, Arnold and Stallone and, you know, The Rock, guys like that, they all have like a charisma. You remember their characters. It's not just the actor in that role, it's also the character they're playing. Arnold is probably the best example, because he's got such a variety. Like you didn't mention Total Recall or Terminator, like all of those movies Running Man. So different, and they're so good that you remember practically every scene from them, let alone just the movie itself. Whereas the JCVD stuff is so generic, so forgettable, that I couldn't tell one from the other.
It's very formulaic. And I know a lot of the, you can say the same thing about a lot of the 80s action, Arnold and Stallone, but like for better or worse, they're were more memorable because they're more memorable guys. And I don't know why it is about Jean-Claude that does, because he's very handsome. He's a big guy. He's got a great physique. He's got undeniable skills. But I don't know. Like I think the other thing is, like, usually there's a signature film in these other Rushmore badasses. Yeah. Like, you think of Arnold and there's several. I mean, Terminator, Predator. Mm-hmm. You think of Stallone and you think of like First Blood. You think of Rocky. JCVD's got Universal Soldier, I think, is clearly his best film.
I think
like
so.
Like those other guys has film that you can take seriously as an adult. Like Predator mm-hmm. fucking holds up. It's got some cartoonish aspects here, but it still works at what it was trying to do 40 years later. Yeah. Stallone, again, like fucking First Blood is just an amazing film. The first two Rockies are legitimately yeah. good films. Mm-hmm. Universal Soldier is like a C plus at best. And that's his best work. Best script, yeah. best, you know, idea, motivation, best, like, you know.
Yeah. I think what the thing about Jean-Claude Van Damme is, he's just sort of like a follow on to these guys, because you talk about Arnold and Stallone and their movies of the 80s, and for Stallone, the 70s, they're kind of paving the path forward, right? It's not like, oh, there were these tropes that they were leaning into. No, they were making tropes, and that's a whole yep. different thing, right? Jean-Claude Van Damme comes in 1988 and says, well, I'm going to do every trope they've done, and I'm going to do 10 times more of it. And that mm-hmm. becomes his career. And I think that's the difference, right? They were paving the path. He was just walking, chasing them down it. And nothing says that more than one of the producers, which I find this absolutely hilarious. One of the producers, Mark DeSalle, said he was looking for, in describing Jean-Claude Van Damme, looking for a new martial arts star who was a ladies' man, but also appeals to both men and women. And then he described Jean-Claude Van Damme as an American hero who fights for justice the American way and kicks the stuffing out of the bad guys, which twice in this sentence, he says American. Mm, I think mm-hmm. he doesn't maybe know who Jean-Claude Van Damme is at that point, because there is nothing about interacting with Jean-Claude Van Damme in person or on screen that would tell you he's American.
Yeah, they try to hide that, like, oh, he grew up overseas on some kind of military base.
He's Belgian. Like,
yeah, he's speaking this crazy. His teenage self is speaking like a ridiculous French accent, and he's in a
dubbed poorly. Yeah,
yeah, and he's on some kind of Asia, I guess it would be a Japanese military base. So it's like, well, where did you get the French accent, man? Was your dad like off the boat, French American, signed up for the military and just become a le military brat? I don't know what the deal is. And Arnold has the same yeah. problem, but like they never
really
bother
American,
to explain
yeah.
it. Yeah. He's just a guy. He's an American soldier and he's doing this, or he's, you know,
yeah.
But I think you also hit the nail on the head that like, Jean-Claude and Steven Seagal were these second wave guys mm-hmm. where like early on there was this fascination with this 80s. It was kind of like, you know, these guys were breaking genres and they were, you know, blazing trails of these tropes and stuff. And you got like fucking Conan O'Brien, Conan the Barbarian was written by Oliver Stone, for Christ's sake.
Right?
Like, you had like A-list talent attached to this stuff. Predator, directed by John McTiernan. Like, really talented people. By the time you get this, like, Hollywood was already kind of getting bored, audiences too. But you can tell that like JCVD is like at home in Belgium again. Handsome guy, beefcake, martial artist. I can do everything these guys can do, except for I can actually fight.
Yeah.
And he also, from everything that I've ever read, he came to the shores of America expecting everything to just happen for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was just going to, like, people are going to look at him and he's just going to be a star and he wasn't have to work for it. And I've heard that he is just kind of like not a bad guy, but just an inconsiderate a pig who yeah. thought everything
conceited.
Of himself.
Yeah.
And like Arnold had a bit of that. And I think even Stallone has had some of the, but like also those guys worked really hard at their craft. Like, you might joke about, but Arnold took tons of like voice coaching
yeah.
and acting lessons. And like, you can't all see it on every single frame and says early work, but that shit eventually paid off, where like Van Damme kind of peaked early and like just became a parody of himself. Like, there was no paying attention to any kind of craft in his career.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. He tended to make just the same kind of movie over and over again.
Yeah.
Because like, by all rights, he did have some very early success, right? I mean, he comes over, he makes this movie as his first movie. The budget on this thing is less than $2 million. It makes $50 million worldwide in the box office. That's a success. Like, he's starting to become a big star. You go into Cyborg and Kickboxer. I don't know what those did as far as box office, but you know, Kickboxer is still a pretty well regarded movie as well. In the same terms that like Bloodsport is, right? Not like, oh, this is an amazing film, but as far as martial arts tournament fighters go, not bad. And this is certainly not the worst tournament fighter I've seen, right? I've seen movies like Street Fighter, which Jean-Claude Van Damme is also in from 5 years later. I've seen movies like some of the Mortal Kombat stuff they did is real bad.
Sure. There's a whole genre of this death tournament. I've seen a bunch of them. So even some like,
I mean,
even
Bruce Lee did direct one, right?
Like, Enter the Dragon is that. Let me ask you this. When do you think Enter the Dragon came out?
I think it was early 70s, like 71.
Okay. You got 74. I actually thought that it came out before then. I thought it was like maybe late 60s. Oh. That actually is one of the, you know, it's kind of crazy to think that that only came out like 12 years, 14 years before. Like, it feels like when I was a kid that like, Bruce Lee was ancient history and like I was living in modern times, but there's not a whole lot of distance that separates Enter the Dragon from Bloodsport. In fact, the Bolo Young as like a 19-20 year old was one of the stars of Enter the Dragon.
Isn't Chuck Norris still looks in like that too?
Is he? I know he's in one of them. I can't remember if it's that or
I don't either.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I gotta confess, I haven't seen a lot of Bruce Lee films.
Yeah,
I think I've
seen
a lot of Bruce Lee YouTube compilations. So like, I've seen him fight Texas Walker Texas Ranger, but I have no idea what film it's from.
And I've seen him fight basketball players and Texas Rangers and
sure, all that. But anyway, that's what I'm saying is like, it's really hard to place the second wave because like undeniable characters, they're not great characters, but he's got a shit ton of them that are absolute badasses. Champion. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy's like build is 5'10". I believe it. And he's ripped and shredded, great physique.
Muscles from Brussels, baby.
But the charisma, because he does feel like one of those guys who was born handsome and kind of good looking and never learned like any kind of art of like any kind of personal relationship. It's like he walks in a room, he expects people to think he's awesome and like him. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somehow like his presence on screen oozes ego. And I don't know what it is. I don't think it's in the script. I think it's just him. But yeah, I mean, I bet his looks and his physique and whatever scraps of personality he does have go a very long way with most people.
Sure.
Like if you're in a room with Jean-Claude Van Damme from that era, it's probably like, okay, this is the guy to impress here because he's it.
Right. And I've heard other things like Jean-Claude, like just does not hide his emotions. Like if he's bored with something, he's just going to like walk away from you. If he thinks that something's stupid, he's going to make a, you know, it's like, it's not like he's got any kind of tact or like tactical or charm or so. I think that's, it's going to be tough when we go and revisit these guys. And of course, you know, as you know, we're hosting a little badass Kumita ourselves on Twitch on our working Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on twitch.tv/baldmove. It's going to be tough when we're going through the, putting these people all in their historical perspectives, what to do with the Seagals and the Jean-Claudes who have those undeniable, you know, they like Steven Seagal, when you watch Under Siege, I know you haven't yet. Like, I wouldn't want to be in a fight with him. He's a big dude. He moves fast. He seems like he can throw you around, but like, they're just fucking empty suits, man, compared to like, you know, Arnold, The Rock, especially when you put him against guys like Clint Eastwood or, goddamn, who's the guy from Die Hard?
Bruce Willis.
The John McClanes, the Bruce Willises, like when you guys got, or like I said, The Rock, guys who have like megawatt personalities, they just get blown off the stage by these guys.
Speaking of not wanting to fight people, have you heard the story that Stallone told about the time that Jean-Claude Van Damme was fed up with Steven Seagal talking shit about how he could kick his ass? So
no,
Sylvester Stallone says they were in Miami at his house in 97.
And a well-attested story. I like it. I like
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Straight from the horse's mouth. And Steven Seagal was talking shit about how he could kick JCVD's ass. JCVD is there. So he goes and he says, let's take it outside right now. Let's do this. Tire your shit.
I love
Seagal.
It. I love it.
And Seagal turns him down and says no. And Sylvester Stallone says it was because he was just looking at JCVD and he knows like he's just too strong. He can't take him. So I don't know if that dispute was ever resolved, because Jean-Claude Van Damme chased him to another club. Like Steven Seagal left the house, Sylvester Stallone's house, goes to a club. JCVD chases him there and confronts him again and says, hey, let's do this. And he turns him down finally and says, nah, and goes home.
So like when you said, I want to make sure I get the story correct. Because when you said that Stallone said that like Seagal looked at him and he was are you saying Seagal thought he was so strong that it wouldn't be a challenge, or that JCVD was too strong for him?
JCVD was too strong for him. So Stallone is saying that Seagal was chicken because JCVD was too much.
That's too wild, because Steven Seagal's a big dude. He's like 6'4" and he's got a decent amount of beef. And I guess he's actually good at the judo and the aikido shit that he was.
Steven Seagal is no shit martial artist. Like he trained in Japan. His adulthood was like a Japanese aikido instructor. He comes over to America and he forms, I think, the first aikido dojo in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. No shit, this guy is a martial arts master. He's a 7th level black belt or whatever. So,
yeah.
I think,
and I've
Seagal
seen
probably
like before he got famous, I've seen like tournament footage of him like taking on 2 and 3 guys at a time. Now, I will say that the aikido style is not impressive looking. It's very much like judo, where it's like you grab a guy's gi by here and here, and you do your arms like that, and the guy just goes flying.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it's pretty fucking effective. I don't know how it'd do in the octagon.
I don't know.
I wonder if like Seagal might actually have that kind of like, yeah, what if I just kill this guy? what's it like? Jean-Claude's just drunk and he's belligerent. I'm trying to have a good time in the club. And this guy is like, what is the upside here? You know, if I whip his ass, then like, well, I've got 6 inches and 30 pounds on him. And everybody's like, well, of course, he whipped his ass. He beats me because, you know, in a street fight, anything can happen. Right. Even in the ring, anything can happen. Like, he might just be like maybe the sane one of the two. But Stallone's like, oh, he's just a pussy.
right. I don't know. It's a hilarious story, though.
Yeah,
I just love the third hand nature of it.
We can't leave Bolo Young off our list,
dude.
Because I got to say, like, of 80s like arch villains, this guy is one of the memorable ones. Like Arnold had Predator. Jean-Claude Van Damme has this guy, and they're roughly equal in terms of like just being terrifying on screen.
Yeah, there's a shot of Bolo Young where he's standing over a guy he's just beat, maybe over Ray, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like got this crazy look on his face and he's grinning and his pecs are flexing back and forth. And I'm like, that's terrifying.
Yeah, you see some of the like those like what's the crazy 88 and Kill Bill that some of them run around in those like devil masks, those Asian spot, like his face briefly transforms into like something truly like demonic. His like eyes bulge and his bang, like he has like the best crazy karate face I've seen. Mm-hmm. And he's competing against JCVD, one of the best. And it's not just his physique and his technique and the way his like his fists do look legitimately like they're made of concrete.
Yeah.
But yeah, like his personality, the fact that like he's the bad boy of, again, an underground death sport arena.
Right.
You know, he's like he's the bad boy of that. And he kind of plays it up. He plays into the crowd. He disrespects the judges and the system. He will kill a man just because he beat his speed record for knockout. It's some crazy shit. and he's really good at it.
Yeah, the movie does a pretty good job of building him up as the villain, I think. Like, they talk about the history, his history with the tournament, and how, I don't know if it was the previous year or years before, he's killed someone in the tournament, and the guy didn't even have a chance to go to the hospital. He just died on the mat. And then, you know, the whole time, Ray is like antagonizing him, calling him out in the crowd. He beats his first opponent, who's like 4 foot nothing. And he points at Chong Li and he's like, "You're next, buddy. I want you." You just know something bad is coming.
I'm going to kill you. Yeah. He's like making death threats from the ring.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Is this an underground illegal death sport where killing is like encouraged or like or just seen as an inevitable side effect? Or because like I'm very puzzled at why I'm going to call them the Triad, because they said the term and they never showed up. And then these guys are the ones running it. So I'm going to call that they are the Triad. You know, the judge who's there on the runway, they keep calling the like they got this weird incline thing. It's called the runway, which makes it sound like a walk-off from Zoolander. Everything they're talking about, "I'll see you on the runway, pal." I'm like, fucking shit, man. Is David Bowie going to call this fight?
Yeah.
But they, when he kills this guy, and it's kind of gratuitous, but I felt like his kind of thing was to grab a dude and snap his neck at the end. Like, I feel like he does it three times. But he does it to find the second to last fight, and for some reason the judge is like, "Oh, this has gone too far. This is too much." The crowd is eating it up. The Triad turn their back on him, and all the crowd then like shuts up. And what the hell was going on there? Do you have any idea?
It is confusing because we're in a no holds barred tournament, full contact, right? And this is like maybe where the movie and real life like get confusing, because I think there probably are full contact tournaments, but nobody's dying in them, right? Like, it's incredibly hard to actually kill somebody accidentally in a martial arts tournament. You know, one punch is not going to do it. I've seen enough UFC to know the human body can take some abuse, but they probably don't also try and snap necks. So, and when you get the Chinese mafia involved, when you get the police apparently just totally looking the other way and allowing this thing to happen. Yeah, it gets real muddy. I get confused on what's allowed, what isn't, what's seen as proper or improper.
Who knows? I mean, this guy's doing like just giant nut and groin punches throughout the whole movie, and no one bats an eye, but like he smothers a guy's face in his armpit and punches his forehead, and suddenly the judge is like, "This what is
yeah."
I mean, I saw rabbit punches, every type of elite. Like, I think that's part of it is like, I think they illustrated every single illegal strike that would get you thrown out of boxing. Because the other thing is like the first fight that you see is a guy gets punched in the mouth and blood comes out. And it's like, that's what they call a blood sport. I'm like, shit, man. So every fucking boxing match I've ever seen is blood sport. Yeah. Like, OK, you know, I thought blood sport is when you play to die. Like, it's gladiatorial,
right?
And this felt like, no, there was rules like you shouldn't kill people. If you hit a guy and knock him out or throw him out of the ring, he dies as a matter of being knocked, punched or whatever. But like to kill a man. But then again, this guy snapped like three different necks. Like, what did he do that he didn't do against Jackson? You know,
And they don't say that one of the ways of winning is to kill people, right? They just say you can knock him out. You can make him say, mate, or you can throw him off the runway. And like killing, I guess, is an option. I guess that's technically a knockout.
Yeah. And like, was it the fact that he did it to an American and they don't? Because like there's definitely a lot of anti-American, what I would call culturalism, if not out and racism. But it's also weird how it was like not universally enforced. Like, for example, Lumberjack McGee, you know, sidles up and gives his invitation. This guy looks like he just like you got the ugliest American. You put him in a crate. You slow shipped him over there. Didn't feed him. And he's bust out. And he's just like, he's Tasmanian devil. And they like, look at his invitation. No problem. Frank Dukes, you know, his clean cut dude wearing a suit, puts his invitation like a fucking American in our tournament. I got to see you demonstrate this exotic death touch that you could only learn from your super agent. Like, what the hell, man?
I think the thing there. So first of all, you're absolutely right about Ray. there seems to be a very stringent rule set on who gets into this tournament. You have to be of some stature. Yeah. And Ray, I don't know what the fuck he did. Shotgun a beer the fastest. Like, I don't know what he did to get into this tournament. But they put Frank Dukes through a rigorous test where I think the reason they do that is because he claims to be from Tanaka's house, his dojo, whatever. And they don't believe him, right? Because Tanaka is Japanese and he is American. And they're like, okay, well, prove that you are who you say you are.
Yeah, but who
cares? Not prove you're good enough to be in the tournament. Prove who you are, who you say you are.
I guess, but you just let Zangief into this thing, man. Like, what did this guy do?
He did a spinning pile driver. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah, sure. He can get in, but Guile, we got to make sure it's like, I want to see you comb your hair with a laser or some shit. Right. I just thought it was really funny that like, it'd be one thing if they let Frank in first and then they challenged him, but like they clearly let the man monster from America in first.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of that with like, so like Frank as a teenager goes to steal a katana from this guy, his master Tanaka, and he gets busted. And in lieu of like turning him into the authorities, he works out a deal with his dad. It's like, and wait, his dad's not even in the military. His dad's a fucking vineyardist, a vintner. He makes wine.
Is he? I glossed over that part.
He's a French. Yeah, because he's like, you train the vine to be,
that's
to be,
why
you use science
metaphor
to train your vine. And I use karate to train the young men. Uh-huh. And like, I'm like, OK, but then it's like they make it very clear that like, I'm not actually training you anything. You're just here to be my son's punching bag because you're bigger and tougher than him. And like, make it very clear that he said, like, his kid calls him like a round eye to his face. And I'm like, well, that's pretty strong. But then I'm like, well, I guess, you know, if your family died in an American atomic fire, okay, sure. That all tracks. But it's hilarious because like, after his son dies, Frank goes to this guy and is like, you trained me like a son. And I'm like, no, man, I watched a flashback. You were a second class. The flashback we're still in, by the way. You were a second class person, member of this family. You were never like trained as a son. In fact, you were explicitly not trained as a son.
Yeah, there's some point during that flashback where his kid falls off the radar. And I think it's after Frank helps him with the bullies at school.
Well, and no, I don't know why it dies somehow. And I don't know why. Yeah, his son dies, so he can't compete in the Kumite. Because that's like, one day I'll be in the Kumite and I'll prove my worth to my father.
Oh, I thought that was his kid who got killed in the atomic fires.
No.
That was what?
Yeah, and I'd forgotten enough about this movie that I actually thought that might be Bolo Young, like that they're going to have this grudge because because I was like, where is this all going to go? But no, he just, so then he's like, well, your son's dead and you'll never do the Kumite, so you might as well train me. Why not?
Yeah.
And that lean, because a lot of these, this movie like vividly stuck, is like burned in my brain, like his master pulling his crotch apart with like pulleys and ropes. Like I remember that like completely.
And his crotch being too strong. Yeah.
His crotch being indomitable, like you can't rip it in half. What is the point? Like, also, like, what is the point of that particular part of the training?
Focus. It's all about focus, right? I mean, ultimately is what it comes down to. If you can focus when your crotch is being actively rent asunder, you can focus during any high stress situation, whether you have salt in your eyes or not.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball kind of philosophy.
Exactly.
But there's this like some really hilarious scenes, like the culmination of this brutal training montage. One of the most like this is Sensei's like beating him with rods and like beating him blindfolded. And then he has to serve like this elaborate tea ceremony to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And like blindfolded, not miss a spot. And then the master moves his cup and then goes to punch him. And Van Damme like blocks him effortlessly.
Yeah.
And he then looks over to And it, he looks over at his wife, who has not changed expression of delight throughout this entire ceremony, and kind of cocks his eyebrow like, not bad. I don't know. It's just really funny.
I do love the training montage. And yes, those are the parts along with, you know, the split kicks and the high jumps and all the things, the impressive physical things that Jean-Claude Van Damme is doing. The no shit impressive stuff, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
The splits that he does, him, you know, resisting the crotch rip, him doing the splits to the mat and punching a dude in the nuts. And I'll give you this too. Like, I'm thinking, okay, you do the splits, you come down, you straight punch the guy in the nuts. It's not a straight punch. It's an uppercut. I mean, the uppercut to the nuts is a seldom seen move that would devastate you.
It's a Hadouken right through the nutsack.
Yeah, it's brutal. When he jumps over, you know, Chong Li, when he's meditating out there in the splits, there's just so many moments where the kicks that he's doing, like, this made Jean-Claude Van Damme a household name for roundhouse kicks and splits. Because he does so many roundhouse kicks, so many splits. There's one sequence I really like where he's doing like these windmill kicks where he's kicking around in big circles at this guy's head. And he's doing like, I think he does four of them in a row without touching the mat and just chases this guy across the runway, kicking at him. I mean, very physically impressive stuff.
And they do this stuff where they do a lot of stuff where you can tell, like, when they punch them, they're whiffing, but they're doing nice camera angles. Yeah. You can't tell. But they do a lot of slow-mo roundhouses where Jean-Claude's foot is clearly making contact with these guys. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's in the air spinning and kicking and the slow-mo implies that this, I'm sure that this was like half speed, but it looks really fucking cool. Like, there's some legit like head snaps of that kind of stuff. And maybe it's like even slower than I think, quarter speed or something, but it really looks good. Some of the fighting, now I will say that, like, this is very dated from almost, you know, like, if you've seen any kind of like modern wire fu, you know, if you've seen anything Jackie Chan got up to and at contemporaneous of this, like, while Americans were content to just like re-envision our early 80s glory, they were fucking innovating over there in Hong Kong. Like, compare this to like Legend of Drunken Master or something. It's still pretty good, but it's like, it's weird and it's isolated. Like, someone will do a move.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's it. Like, and then you'll cut to a different angle and another move. And there's also no, this is like the Rocky of karate films, because no one plays defense. Like, if someone blocks, it's at a dramatic moment. Like, Frank realizes, oh yeah, I don't have to see the fight. Block, just so you know, the fight's about to turn. And then it's going to be a one-sided contest going the other way.
And there's a lot of space in these fights. So people give people a lot of time to recover. There will be one devastating kick. They fall to the mat on hands and knees, and 15 seconds later, they're still being, you know, allowed space.
Yeah, you know, in Mike Tyson's punch out, when you land a star punch on the guy and they go like wow, 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 wow for 5 seconds, people unironically do that in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's part of the karate face. There's the victorious karate face, and there's like, oh shit, I just got punched and I have no plan for this karate face where you're essentially waiting for little Mac to land that uppercut on you.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, oh my God. Okay. This movie starts off real fast and strong. It hits you with this 80s ass action movie soundtrack, which literally takes a full letter grade off this movie in 2021.
Yep. It's bad.
This soundtrack is cover your ears awful. There is just impressive. It starts off with a montage of board, ice, and literal nut busting. And the nut busting, there's this guy. So like, there's this dude crushing, I think it's Chong Li that's crushing the blocks of ice. Mm-hmm. There's some, I know, Norwegian looking motherfucker splitting these 4-inch boards, man. It's crazy. And there's this guy looking like Jimmy Superfly Snuka coming out of the jungle and busting coconuts.
Yeah.
And this gentleman, who is black, has a fighting style which I can only describe as monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool and impressive, but the whole thing is just, no, yikes, and bad. Yeah. You know,
I mean, maybe there is a fighting style like that. I don't know. I'm no expert.
But you don't put the man in like a tribal headset and a leopard skin bikini to do it in, right? You know? Right. Or it's like, I also, like, I've seen drunken kung fu. They don't use, it's like, it's usually, it's okay. Like, they do kung fu and then every couple seconds they'll do a drunken pose. Like, I've never seen anyone commit to something as much as this guy committed to it. And it's just, it's one of the big cringes of the film. The nut busting monkey style.
There are a lot of stereotypes represented in this movie and different fighting styles. There's a guy I can only call Grandpa Sumo, who looks like he's got a Steven Seagal bad dye job, dark hair.
Shoe polish.
Yeah, and he's got to be 50 years old. And he's just the guy who comes at you with his arms a little bit wider than they should be. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's going to belly you off the runway. And they have a monkey man fighting style guy go up against him. And I just, like, I don't know how that monkey man fighting style would ever be effective in this tournament, because it doesn't seem to do anything to a guy who's even 6 inches bigger than you are.
No, like, you can use him as a jungle gym, but at the end of the day, he's going to grab you and destroy you. And what's funny is, like, so much of this reminded me of watching UFC, like, one through about 6 or 7, because you would see, like, a literal sumo wrestler square off against a judo guy
or a street fighter, right?
A bare knuckle brawler would go against a guy who's like a seventh Dan karate guy wearing a full gi. And like, it's kind of wild how, I wonder if like Dana White saw this movie and is like, what if, but real?
For sure.
Because I'll be damned if that's not what it looked like. It's like literally every fucking fighting style. And maybe there was even a monkey man fighting style at one point, because I can clearly remember a poor sumo guy getting just everything he could, like this like 5'8" dude that was like lightning fast, giving him every bit that he could handle in one of those early UFCs. But it does like seem, yeah, it just capoeira. Seems like it just dance you out. Yeah, I was about to say, it's like capoeira, where it's like, that looks cool, and you can kind of bust one of those moves out in a real MMA fight. But if you did it the whole time, you'd get your ass kicked, because you'd wear yourself out and you just leave yourself mass. If you ever miss one of those fancy kicks, you're going to leave yourself way open for a counter.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. And this tournament it feels remarkably new to be as old as they claim it is. They claim that, like, it was 100 years. The tournament has been going on for 100 years, and it's the way that these old fighting clans, or these old, you know, organized crime syndicates used to prove like who was the best fighter within the ranks.
Yeah, I feel like it historically they're trying to it got started just after like the Boxer Rebellion or something, right when like Britain started to lose the grip on Hong Kong, and it kind of like there was these gray areas formed, and in the vacuum of that, this human fighting championship started.
I don't know anything about that, but the way the movie portrays it, it's a super old tournament. And I saw the way that UFC evolved. It went from dudes with mohawks and ripped jean jackets to everybody fights exactly the same, because it's the only way to possibly win this tournament. It's the most effective way to fight under these rules. This,
and it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it turns out.
Right. You got to have a strong ground game, and you got to be able to box when you're in the stand-up parts.
Yep.
This tournament looks remarkably juvenile as far as tournaments go, because everybody's fighting with different styles. Nothing has been refined down to its essence.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the other thing about this tournament. This tournament is all kinds of weird as portrayed in the movie, because it's like this underground thing, but it's not. We talked a little bit about that. People know it exists, but nobody can find it. And yet, one of the established martial arts organizations, the International Fighters Arts Association or something like that, has co-sponsored this deal. So they're like doing sponsorships for an underground tournament that is run by like the Chinese mafia. I don't know what's going on with this, but it doesn't seem right.
And I love how the American reporter is there, and like her whole strategy is hanging out of hotels and going up and looking at anyone who's wearing a gi and is like, where is this illegal underground tournament? Come on, you can tell me.
How physically fit do they look?
Yeah. But you're right. If this is a 100-year tournament, they would not have fucking sumo guys against monkey style. No. Like, they would have, like, you know what? Crane beats dragon. Right. Dragon beats monkey. And, you know, drag. It's yeah, it didn't feel, it felt like something they just threw together.
Yeah.
Which is one of the ways I think you can tell that Frank Dukes is a liar. Turns out. But
oh, shit.
Not quite ready to talk about that. Just teasing that conversation for later.
Here's the thing I'll say about the relationship, the way they portray the reporter in this movie, whose name I don't know. They do an okay job of making us understand that the relationship that she has with Frank Dukes is not all about the tournament, that she genuinely is into him. Because
you said the movie does a good job.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, in its 1980s action movie way, right? It's not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it is going to tell you what you need to know. And them saying, like, Frank saying, no, I can't help you. And then her showing up the next day with some other dude, having undercovered her way into this tournament, tells me that, like, whatever relationship they're going to have moving forward is not about the tournament. It's about him and her.
Okay.
So yeah, shortcuts, I can see that. But it works.
That's one of the few times it did work. But, like, their meet-cute was literally... So we talk about stereotypes. They're able to get... They're in this film, filmed in Hong Kong, they're able to get, as far as I can tell, 3 white guys, 2 black guys, and every other race and nationality had to be filled out by Asians. Because there is a hilarious attempt at an Asian Arab.
Oh, in this, right? In this film. They just put some kind of headdress on him. Yeah.
They went to the one Italian restaurant in Hong Kong. They snatched the tablecloth and they threw a headband over it and called him Hussein.
Uh-huh.
And that's the meet cute that Jean-Claude has with this lady, is that this Hussein character is just going to carry her off to his hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. The movie, to its credit, plays the woman as horrified and aghast at the entire proceedings the whole time, until she's not at the end of it. But Jean-Claude comes in and it's like, hey, look. We all want to have sex with this woman, whether she wants to or not.
Right.
But if we fight, which is the natural thing we should do, I mean, that's what we should do. If there's a discrepancy of who should have this woman, we should just, the strongest should have her, obviously. We're not arguing that. But these triads has got those bullshit rule that if we fight outside the tournament, we'll both get kicked out, and no one wants that. So let's resolve it with a magic trick.
Yes.
And that's the sense he does close magic to befuddle this guy, who, by the way, just accepts the result without... And then the woman turns from, like, oh my God, I'm literally being traded like cattle, to, like, delighted that Jean-Claude won, and now he can squire her about Hong Kong.
To be fair, he has very fast hands. Very fast.
He has very fast hands, that's true. But, like, I didn't quite buy their relationship. Like, I appreciate what they did, as you said, like, they demonstrated that she didn't need him for access to the Kumite anymore. But, like, they literally have sex the next day, and I'm not sure why, except for, I guess, Jean-Claude Van Damme is very physically fit and good looking, and he can do splits. He can split kick over his head. That's got to be fun.
They have one of the few instances of, like, sexualized male nudity that I can think of in cinema. When like, she's laying in bed and looking over at him as he's, like, strapping on his underwear.
Right. Yeah. But the thing is, so it's like, okay, well, she's just fucking him for sport. That's cool.
Yeah.
But then she goes full on, like, who's the girl from Rocky? Adrian. She goes full on Adrian in late stage Rocky with, like, I can't believe you guys are just punching each other. And it's so, I'm a reporter who's wanting to get to the bottom of you guys punching and I just can't unbelieve that I've got to the bottom. It's just all a bunch of fucking blood sport. And it's crazy. And you might, I'm like, what is this? I don't, why should he care about you? Why should you care about him?
Yeah.
If he dies, this is a good story. Like that. The yeah. I just thought like she was just there so that they can have a nice like every 80s movie had to have the male and female protagonist square off and have sex to some kind of jazzy sax solo. That was a requirement. Oh, yeah. That was in the contracts, and it was still 88. So it was enforced. That's the only thing I can figure.
Yeah. In this case, two bad 80s synth pop. I don't know what this is. It's a bad soundtrack. It's very bad. That chase scene is maybe the worst. And let's talk about this, God. Because the other very confusing, very nonsensical part of this movie is Frank Dukes's backstory here and what he's doing over here in China. He is apparently AWOL as a captain of what? The army? I don't know. I don't know what he's a captain
of.
Yeah,
he's captain of the army is what they established. Yeah.
He's a captain in the army. He goes AWOL. To fight in this tournament to, you know, prove the honor of the Tanaka clan. And then the government comes after him and they send two people in this case, some old dude and Forrest Whitaker. And they are hunting him through this entire movie, trying to stop him from competing in the Kumite and bring him back to America for reasons I can only explain as we've invested too much money in you. Our human super soldier. I don't know what the backstory is here with Frank Dukes other than the real life backstory, which maybe we can talk about soon, but like,
yeah,
it's weird because there are no consequences period for anything that he does in relation to the army. He goes AWOL, he beats Chinese police officers in the streets, no problem there. Even from their captain.
Well, they are in the Kowloon walled city where they have no jurisdiction. So maybe it's, you know.
Well, he brings like, in his own officers.
Is it even illegal to punch an American cop in Canada? Like he just as soon as he crossed the border, he's just some asshole, right? I can punch him.
I guess
like,
so.
He steps up to me in a bar. Like it's not assaulting an officer, right? So like I think it's like yeah, you cross the line. It's like when Cletus gets over the line and Duke's a hazard, like the Duke boys just beat the piss out of him. That's what happened. Right?
Right. He knows not to cross.
Yeah. Yeah. Coo, coo, coo. Oh, God. I crossed the line. You beat the bow and Duke. They're beating the shit out of me. Yeah.
But there's no consequences, apparently, for him going AWOL. They're just like at the end of this movie, they have one of those scenes where like Frank Dukes tricks him and he ends up on the plane before they are. And they think they're waiting for him, but he's waiting for them. And they're just like, that Frank Dukes, he's a real handful. Dude, he went AWOL. He's got to be court-martialed. Like,
That's what I thought. I thought these guys were like JAG, that they were here to bring in the military justice. But like at the end, it's like, well, you're such a good fighter. We're just glad you're on our side. So let's just get you back on base and forget all this happened.
But they never really go into that, right? Like, clearly the biggest part of this is the martial arts training. What could the American military have trained him in that would be so much more valuable than what Mr. Tanaka trained him in over the course of his entire young adulthood?
I don't know. Like they just did these movie people not know that like just leaving being absent without leave that's
a crime
unto itself. Uh-huh. Like if you're the world's worst soldier. And you signed up for Uncle Sam and walk off the base, they're going to hunt you down.
Right.
Like,
let alone if you're a human super weapon.
You don't need to be fucking like a unlicensed weapon like Nick Cage and Con Air or something to be in a lot of trouble when you're off your base. It's a bad deal. Like, that's it. They don't need it. Like, he just went AWOL. That's all the story I need, you know?
It must be, like, my only guess here is that they wanted him to be like what that producer said, right? An American hero who does things the American way and kicks the bad guys' asses. They wanted him to be that in this movie. And so they just shoehorned this plot of him being part of the American military and them coming after him because he's such a good soldier, but they never explain any of it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the foot rat chase. I actually like that.
I like that the chase itself. It's Jackie Chan esque in its.
I was about
feel.
To say because like Jean-Claude Van Damme is clearly just fucking with him with his superior. Like the idea that Forrest Whitaker, even in his prime, Forrest Whitaker was never like a Usain Bolt. I mean, he's a pretty lumbering fellow. And like JCVD is just like bouncing off buses and like doing somersaults off street lamps and shit. And just all when he loses him and the guy's like winded and like he's like, hey, God, I mean, he's just like just having fun. And foot race over the boats was actually cool. Mm-hmm. And the guy's fault is all really funny stuff. It's just betrayed by the soundtrack, man.
Totally.
And you think it like I think this clearly we talk about the influence of this film. Like Rocky's got to be because Rocky had a similarly. Like it's a of a time and place and like the montage, some of that montage stuff shouldn't work, but it does. I don't think this film realizes the degree of difficulty of having that kind of like really synthy kind of soaring montage music and just having it be bad. Like you can't make that on a $1.5 million budget.
Right.
You just can't.
And you can't make it 10 years after Rocky did. Right. Like,
right.
And have people not go, hey, that's the thing that Rocky did. And also you're doing it much more poorly. And that's the main problem here is that better movies have already done this better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot. I think that's Jean-Claude Van Damme's career. Better movies have already done this better.
Although I'll give him, I don't know that anyone's ever done the split kick roundhouse, just splits better than Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's the man.
No, I'm honestly, if Jean-Claude Van Damme had come to America 10 years early and gotten 2 or 3 years of like voice and acting training, he could have been a real and maybe some humility and work ethic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to say no work ethic, because obviously a man with a body like that and with the martial arts career he has got crazy amounts of discipline. But I think that something went haywire and that he could only apply it in that one area of his life is what it seems like.
And it's got to be really hard to break into Hollywood as a foreign actor as well, because you don't have any of those relationships that are going to propel you to start
especially back then. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. And so you get mixed up with like some second tier talent and you could probably just get stuck there. And I think that's what happened to JCVD.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in a club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
We
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Okay, we heap praise on Chong Li because he's a really impressive character. Easily top 10, maybe top 5 martial arts bad guy I've seen in a film. Mm-hmm. But I like how there's a couple scenes where he's really funny, like when the Mad Dog character Jackson wins his first fight against the little guy and he throws him into orbit and he just turns instantly to Chong Li and he's like, I'm going to kill you, man. Mm-hmm. And they cut to Chong Li and he has this reaction like he looks around like he might be talking to somebody else like me. And I'm like, that's such an out of character reaction for everything else he does in the rest of the film. Like, yeah. What the fuck? Also, the very first time Chong Li takes the stage to fuck a dude up, he begins the round by employing what's known as the farmer's hanky, where he plugs one nostril, turns his head, and blows the snot out of the one side, and then plugs his nostril, turns his head, blows the snot the other. I'm like, what the fuck was that? Was that like just the what he does before he just clears his pipes before a fight? Or did the director say? Like, Frank Dukes is like, there's this one dude I met at this one kumite, and I always thought it was so funny. He could blow his nose out using a Kleenex. It was amazing.
I mean, you'll see like UFC guys and stuff do this. I think it's just a way to make sure there are no obstructions in your breathing pathway, right? The more oxygen you got, the better.
Pipes.
Yeah.
And how many of those MMA guys do it just because they saw Chong Li doing it?
92%. Yeah.
Chong Li deliberately compound fractured that one dude's leg.
That's rough to watch.
It's rough to watch, but it's honestly shocking how bad the effect was done in 1988.
Sure.
Like, I get it's a $1.5 million budget, but how hard is it to show bone sticking through some dude's skin? And this managed to look like Halloween prop quality. Bad Halloween type, type quality.
Maybe that's the thing. I have a hard time looking at it, and so I don't notice how bad it is, because I kind of wince and look away every time it happens.
You? Mr. Gorehound?
Yeah, there's something about, like, the reality of bones coming out of people's bodies that is just another level. Like, I can watch somebody get their head sawn off or whatever, have their intestines removed through their butthole, but like, I just can't watch more realistic injuries.
Compound fracture, that could actually happen. Yeah,
right. Like skateboard videos, skateboard fail videos. I cannot watch those.
Oh God, I saw a compound fracture in real life, and it was pretty fucking horrifying. No. I gotta say. Also, Jackson comically turning his back on Chong Li.
Oh,
it was
so
pretty
dumb.
Great.
Yeah,
so great. Like, he gets one good punch and Chong Li's not even knocked out. He's just kind of like not even really dazed. He just gets knocked his butt on the floor. And this guy gets up and just starts playing to the crowd. Mm-hmm. But Jackson might have won the tournament had he just, finished it. Had he not Prince Oberon'd it and just done the deed and went right to the finish. And I love how, like, after Chong Li apparently killed again, the movie tells me that Jackson's dead. And Frank runs up and desperately grabs him, and the way he shows his love for his character, he's just essentially juggling this guy's skull and spine, right, and just like just tossing his head back and forth between his head. Jackson is like, if you didn't have neck and head trauma, he's got it now, dude. Right. Like, he might have had a broken now his neck is severed. He's dead. Makes a full recovery just a day later in the hospital, turns out. Just need to get a sleep in.
Yeah, be out in a week.
Frank comes back on his last day of the tournament and he has two fights. He has the fight with Chong Li and he has a fight where he hosts, for some no good reason, a rib breaking contest.
Dude, I love it. That's one of those parts of this movie that's seared into my memory.
Same. And I forgot, like, because, like, it's not even the big guy. He's just like,
he's just a dude.
I bet you can't. Yeah, I bet you can't break your ribs. Here, here's my ribs. All right, now you show me your ribs. Ah, oh, I couldn't break them. Now you try.
Okay,
you, they're just trading rib shots, man.
I think this movie is trying to be very tightly written, because there's a line also where before Ray fights Chong Li, he stops him. He says he's weak in the body, right? Go for his body. Watch his right leg. I think this is them saying Frank Dukes does not have a weakness, right? Frank Dukes' body is not weak.
Right, he's demonstrating. Yeah.
And they do that too many times, maybe, in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Because the time when we talked about that scene where the meet cute, or I don't know what to call it, but that magic trick he does where he replaces a coin in the guy's hand, when they show him do that, they also flash back to him pulling koi out of the pond.
Yeah, plucking the goldfish, yeah.
I think this movie is trying to connect literally every move that he does with something from his training in his teen years.
Ah.
And that, gotcha. That those body kicks are part of that, connecting those moves with, you know, the two main characters here. It's trying to,
his master beating him with the canes. The cane, like, right. He was always just whopping around and beating his ribs and stuff, so making him stronger.
Yeah.
I will say that this the final fight does pretty much work, because you got Chong, who is hidden some kind of foreign object in his waistband. You got him tying Jackson's salt bandana pellet. Around. Yeah, small pellet, some kind of drug he's going to employ because he's a dastardly guy.
Oh, no, I think it's salt is what it is. It's salt.
Oh, is it salt? I thought it was some kind of blinding agent or something.
Maybe.
But I guess it could be that salt would be thrown in your eyes. Would be a blinding agent. I thought the really good touch was he ties Jackson's bandana around his knee, because like it's enough of a moment where I was like, all right, I'm up. I want to see your ass get kicked now. It's immediately let down by the fact that Jackson's still alive, and they make it into a joke like, hey, don't lose your clothes in the ring, bro. But like when he ties it on and he makes a face at like Dukes, and Dukes sees it and he's like, fucking game on, like you're ready for this fight to begin. And then,
yeah,
you know,
and they talk about those his right leg, right? Avoid his right leg. And that's the leg he's got it tied on. And like the entire movie, Chong Li is wearing these like kind of flowing silk pant kind of things.
Right. Right.
And so you never see his leg, and you're thinking, OK, you got to avoid his right leg. He's a monster of a man on top. What's he rocking down in the leg region?
Right.
And for that final fight, he does take off those silk pants, and like you're just like, holy shit, this is a moment. The Harley Davidson thing is hanging around this dude's thick ass leg. You're worried about like all of the things from the previous scene where he's talking about don't let his right leg get you.
Yeah,
it's good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. And it turns out that Van Damme's kind of handily handing this guy his ass. And of course, he gets the salt tablet and he throws it in the guy's eyes. And then like Frank doesn't know what to do. He's getting punched. Jean-Claude Van Damme's I've just got drugged and I don't know what to do face is just as good as his vicious karate face, because looks like a scared. He looks like a scared 7-year-old boy. As soon as that salt gets in his eyes, it's like.
It's great. And then he just screams several times, right? He just sits there and screams and screams.
And Chong Li's just beating the shit out of him. He can't punch him. And then he closes his eyes and he remembers, oh, right, I can serve tea while I'm blindfolded.
Which I think the audience definitely remembered before he did.
Oh, for sure. We needed a good 5 minutes slowed down, getting the piss beat out of him montage before Frank could realize, oh, shit, I know what to do here. I was trained for this.
Right.
But some of the stuff, so he blocks the punch and Chong Li can't get it. And like some of the stuff, I love when Chong Li throws the ref at him. Like he just grabs the ref and throws. He's like, oh, yeah, Frank will punch him and he'll be disqualified. And Frank grabs him and the ref, he's already wearing his brown pants because he'd shit himself already a couple times today. And he's like, oh, no, this isn't the right guy. This is just a little Jenny throws him to the side.
So that's not the thing that's going to get you disqualified, throwing the ref. The thing would punching the ref that was thrown at you.
It's legal to throw a ref at your opponent. If your opponent strikes the ref, then it's all over.
Right.
But then Frank puts him away at that, like you said, the beautiful 4 roundhouse scissor kick. What do you call that? Spin kick moves?
Yeah, they're like flying roundhouses, but the other leg is stretched out the other way. And yeah, they're like split roundhouses.
it's a signature move. It's like the Jordan Jumpman. Like when you think of Jean Vlahovic, it's either he's either doing a split kick or he's doing these whirlwind roundhouses.
Yeah.
And it's impressive because he gets height, he gets extension. It looks like there's real power there. I mean, the man's got the skills and a body that can pull him off. So, and then he wins, and that forgives everything. His girl is like giving him the, I guess, the karate sign of respect. The JAG guys are giving him dap and saying everything's cool and we're glad you're on our side. And I guess he's not going to get court-martialed. And that's the end of the, I mean, the movie just immediately ends. Like they go, they establish that Jackson's okay. He's not in any legal jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And then he bows to his girl as he flies off on a plane and that's it.
Yeah. Why do the cops just sit at that tournament or cops, the, you know, CIA, whoever it is?
I don't know because they have to bring him back, but they were moved by, I mean, what are they going to do? Like, because I'm like, were they convinced that he just needs to do this or were they convinced that this is going to be an international incident? Like this guy's already beat up half a precinct of crooked cops. we're going to get the triad involved. They're going to turn their backs on us. It's going to be this whole thing.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan's going to have to apologize. Can't have that happen.
And like, how do we physically take him in? Because.
Right.
With these he's shown guns. He's willing to beat cops senseless. Would he beat us senseless?
Right.
He's already AWOL. He's already court-martialed.
He easily disarmed us of our 50,000-watt stun guns or whatever the fuck they were. Uh-huh. But I guess also, like, what are they going to do? Start firing shots? I mean, there's only so much an agent can do in foreign land, I guess.
Yeah.
Without the cooperation. It's a crazy plot.
It is.
Like, it's amazing that it works in 90 minutes and it only works with a very early triple nested deep flashback that lasts 20 minutes and has two montages. Like, that's how much narrative momentum this film has, because, if it ever stops to think about any of its premises or what's happening. Do you want to talk about Frank Dukes a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
The
real Dukes, because as the movie says at the end, right, Frank Dukes is a real person. I can read this to you. I wrote it all down. From 1975 to 1980, Frank Dukes fought 329 matches and retired undefeated as the world heavyweight full contact Kumite champion. He holds 4 world records: fastest knockout, fastest punch with a knockout, fastest kick with a knockout, most consecutive knockouts in a single tournament. And subsequently, he founded the first American ninjutsu system, Dukes Ryu.
So as far as I can tell, these are only substantiated by Frank Dukes.
Yes.
And the things that he's made that can be substantiated, for example, first of all, he's Canadian and he claims to be a Medal of Honor winner. He claims to be a secret special forces guy who operated in Southeast Asia, not necessarily Vietnam, although there's a lot of places that credit him with Vietnam service record. He says that he was hired by the CIA to work as a covert agent
in the Kumite tournament, right? To bust the organized crime involved in operating.
It might have been connected. I forget exactly, but this guy, like, I remember him being like a big kind of like deal. Cause I've said this before, my cousin was unironically into that Mall Ninja shit and ordered like Soldier of Fortune magazine and all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And, you know, this guy was big. Soldier Fortune magazine, one of the things that brought him down, because like they did an investigation into him in the early 90s and got like freedom of information. Because that's the thing. If you're if you're claiming to be things like a Medal of Honor winner.
Yeah.
That shit is going to be in your service record. This guy's service record was essentially pretty brief. As far as they can tell, he never was deployed overseas, never won any records. Had a psych evaluation towards the end of his career saying that he was prone to flights of fancy and delusion. And yeah. So he also he was claimed to be trained in ninjutsu, the ninja martial arts by Senzo Tiger Tanaka, just like in the film, who is described as a world famous ninja master. And people looked into it, and I guess that this Senzo Tanaka was like a a Japanese martial artist in a James Bond Ian Fleming novel.
Oh, Jesus.
Kumite, there's no like Kumite literally is just like is like Japanese or karate for fighting match. Mm-hmm. Like, and like, you know, like, I don't know, like the Super Bowl is the world championship of football. What does that even fucking mean? Football is not played anywhere outside of like American Canada. So right. Like maybe there is this underground thing that's so cool. It's just called the fight. But like no one can find any information at all about this stuff. And like I said, it just seems like all of his other claims that he's made that you can source and justify are completely false. And his defense is that the military trashed his dossier and put a bunch of lies in there to discredit him.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know. But the thing that complicates it is like this guy is legitimately competent. I didn't say the best or good or even like world class, but I guess he's actually a competent martial artist. Okay. And he held a training session for Bloodsport that lasted like 3 months. And Jean-Claude Van Damme, who is, among other things, a talented and well-regarded martial artist for his time, said it was one of the hardest training sessions he ever did. But I mean, that can mean anything. That can mean this guy's crazy and he's beating him with bamboo sticks and shit. And like, I've never
ripping
had this
his crotch open.
Yeah, ripping his crotch open with like fucking industrial cranes and stuff. It doesn't mean that he's actually some kind of legend. But this guy is essentially just this. I remember this guy. This one guy came and wrote this book called Stolen Valor, which blew up a lot of people's spots because until the internet came around, everybody's uncle was a fucking Navy SEAL or a Green Beret or a Delta Force operator who had extensive experience in Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan. And who could even know? Right. Who could even tell? But like once like SEALs started like getting on the internet and being like, I've never heard of this fucking guy. Have you heard of this guy? And it's incredible how common this is. And like especially hyper masculine context. Like I love you remember I used to love this show called Dual Survival Survivor, where it's always pitted like this one hippie dude that lives in the desert, ran around barefoot with some uber serious special forces dude. They went through three fucking uber serious special forces, dude. All of them fake ass bullshit.
Wow.
Maybe they served in the Marines for 2 years. None of them having survival special. None of them having special forces training. All of them like legitimately cool dudes that could do. But like, why do you have to make shit up? But yeah. The internet just really brought all this shit down to the ground. And Frank Dukes was like at the epicenter of all this because he was one of the biggest fabulists of them all.
Yeah, and I mean, lending, you know, to that air of mystique, I think, is the lack of record keeping in a lot of those contexts before the internet, or even to some degree nowadays, like, you know, and it being like this underground thing that, of course, people aren't going to keep records for if it even exists. And, you know, I read some posts, blog posts, I've read some articles written in magazines a little bit about Frank Dukes and his claims, and some of them seem to be in support of some of that stuff. Like he has trophies that I guess in the 80s people were trying to claim were not real, and he had made it a trophy shop down the street because it was like it was a trophy from the Kumite in like 76 or something. And apparently like that guy was friends with his ex-wife and they were in a bitter divorce dispute at the time. So that could be fake, but then who knows, right? Like this could be all Frank Dukes just making shit up. There's an article there's a letter from like Black Belt magazine that claims he has anti-terrorism knowledge and like military experience of a unique nature. I don't know what that means, but all of this is in like an article that starts off by saying stuff about the movie, and one of the things it claims is that Bolo Jung was 50 years old at the time of filming this film. It turns out he's only 41. I fact checked their asses. So I don't know what to do when you're the first thing out of the gate is a misrepresented fact, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah. And it's who knows? The other thing is like, he has like a 307-1 record. Like that's the other thing. That's like, now that we've seen MMA and like even guys with long careers that like fought for 15, 20 years and were excellent throughout, struggle to maintain like a 40-7, you know, like almost no right. one Ollie goes
some of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea that you can be in 300 blood sports in right. like
in 15
year career. Yeah, yeah. 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 Like what the fuck? You're fighting like what? When do you heal? When do you train? When
well,
do you,
that's do you, are, the other thing about this tournament is they had people fighting multiple full contact matches in a single day. And I'm like, no, that doesn't happen. I've seen UFC yeah. fights. Are you fucking kidding
yeah.
me?
Yeah. They used to do the UFC like that, though, where they would have the whole like, you know, this bracket and like guys would get to the.
You can get your ass kicked and still win. Right. And not be able to get out of bed, let alone fight another match that day.
It was kind of a shit show. It wasn't universally entertaining. Of course, it's not like UFC's like wall to wall exciting on all their cards nowadays. But
sure.
Yeah, I just saw that 300 and like essentially zero record. And I'm like, God, come the fuck on. If you'd said something like 75-15, it would still be incredible to pack into less than 10 years. But like, OK, I can see that. But like, it's also it reminds me of Frank, like in the movie, like he's been through this grueling tournament and he gets to the final after he's had the rib breaking extravaganza. He gets up there and he has like a slight bruised eye. Mm-hmm. No other marks on him.
Yeah.
No bruised ribs, no cuts on his elbows or shins where he's taking these vicious blows. Nothing. No bruising on his kidneys where he's taking some of these punches.
He pops up on the airplane the next day, fresh as a daisy.
Right.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
After the brutal rib breaking competition.
My final question, I don't know if you have stuff you want to talk about, but my final question is the Tanaka family hand signal, whatever the hell that is that just like metaphorically ritually committing suicide by sword? Because it looks like they're wrapping a hand around the hilt and then shoving it into their belly.
Maybe.
And I'm like, what the kind of fucked up family?
Yikes.
Family sigil is that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you got anything else or is that kickboxer? Have we gone an hour and a half on this shit? Oh, my God.
We have. I will say this was a successful movie. It made a lot of money compared to its budget. $50 million mm-hmm. on a $1.5 million budget. It got nominated for one award.
No kidding.
Yeah, 1989, it was nominated. JCVD was nominated for a Razzie for the worst new star.
Oh, no.
I know. Oh, that's mean. But the Razzies are like that.
But, like, there wasn't a worst movie in 88 because like, yeah, this movie sucks, but like,
well, worst new star. There was. He didn't win the Razzie. I guess Ronald McDonald won it and Mac and Me for playing Ronald McDonald. I don't know. It's the Razzies. They're weird. They gave Cocktail the worst movie.
Yeah, Razzies
and
are
Tom Cruise
Razzies
the worst
are very
actor.
Political. Very oh, yeah. political, these Razzies. Oh, yeah. Right. It's all about who you know. All about campaigning for it, sure.
But I will say,
in the right category.
This is a much, much worse movie than I remembered, than 10-year-old me remembers watching this very exciting and super awesome, super rad tournament fighting movie.
Well, also, I think a lot of it is just like if this had a different soundtrack, I think it would go from like a C plus to a B plus easily, because
that
in my mind, I remember these training montages of being like Mr. Miyagi training Daniel-san. Yeah. Right. And it was like very kind of like serious and like, you know, like really building this mentor. But like all that stuff was just in a flashback in the very beginning of the movie. And it was all scored to just terrible, terrible 80s synth, jazz, sax, vocal shit.
At least like one song of which must have been written for this movie, because for the next 3 weeks, I will have Kumite, Kumite, Kumite stuck in my head. You know, and this crazy dude wailing about fighting to survive. The lyrics will be stuck in my head for weeks.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like everything was so on the nose. Like it's like, okay, right. Eye of the Tiger was a jam, but this guy's like literally being like, yeah, I want to fight the Kumite to survive. And then when Jean-Claude gets rejected by his girl and he's on the bus and he's all up in his feelings, they're talking about them when a man is alone in Hong Kong, and he like I mean, it's not that bad, but like honestly, It's pretty close. You'd have to look up the lyrics to prove me wrong, because that's essentially what they are. And it's just, like I said, cover your ears bad.
It's awful.
It would be interesting to go as like the Criterion this and like remaster it and also just completely change the soundtrack.
They did for the soundtrack. They actually took instead of putting Stan Bush's version of Fight to Survive on there, I think they put what's his name? The guy who like produced it or something. One of his versions on the soundtrack, which I will say is not as good. Like Stan Bush can really strangle out a Fight to Survive lyric. But the other dude is just kind of like milquetoast. I don't know. He's not bad. Yeah. He's just, you know, not Stan Bush. Come on.
Yeah, this movie, the better would hold up a little bit. But there's also there's a couple structural changes. Like you can't have the mad dog that's a pig to women be the guy. Like if you remade this like that, he would have been one of the villains, you know, which is also like I thought that was funny about like when Hussein, the fake Asian Arab guy, is sexually harassing this woman, like, you know, Jackson got all pissed off about it. It's like, man, when the guy who recreationally frightens women is like, hey, guys, this is going a little too far, probably going a little too far, you know, it's pretty fucked up. But yeah, and it's like, I mean, I think you can watch this today and keep in mind that you're enjoying it ironically and still have a really good time because like there are so many martial arts tropes on display. There's so much great karate face. There's so much like legitimately cool and impressive, kind of like a Cirque du Soleil. Because there's a lot of like some of this stunt choreography is like, hey, JCVD can jump really high and then do splits. Okay, so we're going to have Chong Li here. Just do a somersault. There's no plausible way that this could ever lead to a successful takedown or attack, but just do a somersault. Just so you're doing something between his legs. That's not sexual. But it's cool like that they're actually doing this with no wires and
it is. It's very cool. So, I wish that there were someone as talented physically as JCVD right now for movies like Mortal Kombat. And I think they exist, but not in the same like way, not with the same kind of dancer's flair that JCVD
had.
You
just never believe it. Like even Jet Li, like was probably the last. Would you say he's probably the last great kind of like martial art? And even he started doing wire
like Tony Jaa.
I guess you're right.
But it's not the same. He's like all about the hard hits, the elbows, the, you know, Muay Thai kind of stuff.
Plus, I've heard about Jet Li. I don't know about Tony Jaa, but I've heard Jet Li that his secret was they always filmed him undercranked.
Oh.
They filmed him at a slightly slower frame rate. So when they play it, he looks like way faster. So it's like you just never can trust anything.
Right.
It's like made after 1995 to be like not fucking with you.
I mean, that's the thing. This movie does the exact opposite, right? It films it at a standard 24 or whatever they're doing and then cranks it down to like 6.
Right. And so you can see.
So you can see that he's really pulling this shit off. There are no wires. That's the impressive, cool thing about this.
And there's one roundhouse kick that Jean-Claude lands on this Bolo guy, Bolo Young. Mm-hmm. Where his foot makes full contact with the guy's face and it snaps his head so far that when it comes back, his lips are like still in the original place and they're like, you know, like there's like
some Wile E. Coyote like, shit.
Yeah. Like his jowls are wobbling and shit. It snapped him so hard. It's like there's some decent contact. And I bet that like and almost every 80s martial arts film I've ever seen, read about, like people get punched for real because the choreography. Yeah, you got $1.5 million. You're filming on location in Hong Kong. You're going to fucking cut some shorts. Some cuts.
Right.
And yeah, I bet dudes took some real shots there, too. And like when they were doing the rib breaking competition, I mean, they're not kicking full force,
right?
But they're kicking the shit out of each other's ribs for sure.
Definitely. You just can't really fake that particular aspect.
It's a complicated figure. Like, it's unlike the first two guys we talked about, Arnold and Stallone, who are just first ballot, easy sail through Hall of Famers. Jean-Claude and I have a feeling Steven Seagal are going to be a little bit controversial.
Looking forward to that next time.
Also, their impact is undeniable. Like, after kind of Arnold and the Stallone got bored doing this shit, these guys were still doing it, like still trying to keep the 80s brainless action stuff alive. Didn't really work, but hey, they're out there doing it. And you got to respect that. So please join us on Wednesday at 1 p.m. for Working Wednesday if you want to debate. This week we'll be talking about the new crop of badasses that's come up since, you know, the 12 years we've been doing this Bald Move thing. MCU has come along. The new DCU has come along. There's a whole bunch of Cavills and a whole bunch of Chris's that have to be categorized. The Rock has done a bunch of shit since the last time we kind of clowned on him. It'll be interesting to see how that's the new guys. We're going to have to categorize all of them. And then the final round of badass deliberations we're doing next week will be taking the old list and new list and merging it into the new 2021 badass Bald Move rankings. So it should be a good time. Mm-hmm. If you like to argue about stupid stuff on the internet, and hell, who doesn't? But that's on twitch.tv coming up this Monday at 1 p.m. Yeah, thanks for listening. I hope you're enjoying our nostalgic look at 80s action films. And we'll be back next week with Steven Seagal, Under Siege. Technically not an 80s action film, but the DNA is there.
Yeah,
the DNA is still, it's like one of those, you know, generational things where it's right in between being a zoomer and a millennial. Who knows? We'll talk about that next week. See you guys then.